I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 112 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is a good friend of mine from the Movies by Minute community, Austin Pryor. Welcome back to the show, Austin.
Hello, and hot dog. And ee-aw. Yeah.
That's right. Hee-haw, hee-haw.
Yeah.
you have to make the
yeah. I thought I'd get away with not doing it.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, no, but no one else can see that you're doing it. I can see that you're doing it. So yes, thank you. Yeah, thank you for acknowledging the deer antlers signal. You know, everyone can just imagine Austin, myself and Austin doing that. You know, the heels.
Okay. There we go.
So always fun. Minute 112 begins with George getting a little confused, even more confused about Pottersville, and ends with George frisking himself.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah,
getting frisky.
That's right. Exactly. So yesterday we ended things with George and Clarence getting thrown out of Nick's bar and finding out that it's actually called Nick's. Clarence explains to George that the reason that Mr. Gower is in the predicament that he's in is because George wasn't there to help save him. So I like the way that they do it in a subtle way of you know, that. Because Clarence is a very simple character and does things in very subtle gestures and things like that. And all he does here is he's nudging him along. You know, he's basically just saying, you know what, you don't know this, but it's because you weren't there. So you're the reason why, you know, the fact that George Bailey didn't exist caused these things to happen and caused these things to change.
Yeah. And he's also helping out the audience.
That's right.
And especially a 1946 audience who's not used as accustomed as we are to alternate timelines and
that's
another
right.
way of, you know, they haven't had the kind of, yeah, they haven't had the Twilight Zone. They haven't had the multiverse, And so, so I think it is funny. I think I think that's also part of the reason that we feel kind of, as a modern audience, we're quite far ahead of George and we're going, okay, George, come on.
Well, come on. We've all been to Hill Valley in so many different places. So why not?
Exactly. And so I was, we've been there and we know we're watching a movie and he's a real character. And it puts me in mind of a certain 1999 dark comedy, Being John Malkovich. You may have heard of it.
Wait, have you seen that?
I have, more than a few times.
Whoosh.
And so in that movie, they make it's like they're... It's kind of a gag in it of like how readily people believe in the ridiculous, supernatural plot that's going on, of like the nature of this portal that leads you to see the world through John Malkovich's eyes. And everybody who's told this during the course of the movie has a few perfunctory kind of, there's no such thing as a portal that'll lead you into somebody. You can't just do that. He's like, yeah, you can. And then people just kind of go for it and believe it. And really, you know, the main point of it, of course, is to just get past it and get on with the fun stuff and get on with the, you know, exploring the implications of this idea rather than getting bogged down in the, but there's just no way. And, you know, it's almost like it's done quite self-consciously in Being John Malkovich, that it's like the script and the movie itself are kind of just nudging you along and saying, look, we're just going to get past this, okay, you know? Whereas in 1946, with that audience, you couldn't do that, and you wouldn't when you haven't... I suppose, like, I might be underestimating a 1946 audience as well, is that, like, that audience had seen several versions and had read to them several versions of A Christmas Carol by that point. And this movie is very, very like a riff on A Christmas Carol as well. I don't know if you've talked about that connection on the series so far, have you?
It's come up a few times, but feel free.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's because the theme of being shown another world, obviously, it's quite different. But instead of being visited by ghosts, it's being visited by angels, visited by an angel. And also, it's kind of like, instead of making Scrooge, who is Potter in this story, not only is he the evil miser, but they're both slumlords, and they're both, you know, so they're both like, they're very similar. But it's almost like, what if Bob Cratchit was a bank manager for the local bank instead of working for Scrooge?
Right.
Which is almost like George even has an opportunity to work for Potter in this. So the parallels are pretty strong. So it's like, instead of Scrooge getting Scrooged and getting, like, you know, stop being such a mean old nasty word, then it's like Bob Cratchit being like told, you know, you do make a difference, you are important, please, you know, have hope and don't throw it all away. And so it has that, and of course they're both Christmas stories.
Yes.
And so, yeah, so it's nice, it's kind of a nice spin on it. And like in the story of A Christmas Carol, there is some of that kind of technical talk about what the rules are. You know what I mean? Like, no, we can see each other, but none of them can see us. You know what I mean? There's rules and stuff. So I kind of think, like, yeah, it's sometimes we can underestimate how much an earlier audience has been primed to think about these, you know, the rules of this haunting or this divine intervention or whatever the supernatural event is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Of course. It's an interesting idea to think about it from our perspective as opposed to the perspective of people who saw this when it came out. I think that could also be one of the reasons why nowadays so many people are familiar with the movie and you know, it basically became a very popular movie, but in 1946 it bombed in the theaters.
Yeah.
No one really cared about it.
Yeah. I've always wondered why that was. I've never really looked into it very much. It just didn't capture the imagination. Did it come out for the Christmas market? Did it come out that time of year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But, it was nominated for Best Picture. I mean, it did get a few, I think it got four Oscar nominations, but the bottom line is that, you know, it just wasn't, people didn't care for the movie until it lost its copyright in the 70s. And then the fact that it was on TV so much, you know, that helped people, you know, I guess, be more exposed to the movie. And once people got exposed to it, they started realizing, wow, this is actually a great idea.
It's not actually in the public domain, is it?
Yes, it is.
It's like, wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That was the problem.
What a gift to the public domain. Yeah, it is a problem. And it meant it was very, I had heard that it was very cheap to show for the networks, and that's why it
It
was a good
wasn't
thing to
cheap
put
to
on at
show, it was
Christmas.
free
But it
to
wasn't cheap, it was free. Yeah, I
show.
didn't know that. That's amazing. So it was free, and then, and I wonder if there's something very kind of suited to television about this movie.
Maybe.
I don't know. I think like it's so cozy and intimate, which obviously works really well in the cinema as well, but there's something about the family gathering around and the fire is going and people are, even if you talk over bits of it, you're going to get the idea.
Right.
And the thing that kind of throws me every time I watch this movie is I'm always thrown by the structure. And I mentioned yesterday about how long it takes to get to the Christmassy part of it. But it's also how short this part. Now, I don't want to spoil, we're in this part now. But this alternative world where what you call where we're in now, and we're looking at this alternative, Pottersville. It's only 17 and a half minutes
That's right.
between the spell being cast and coming back out of it. Which well, the minutes of this movie. But
I'm a little familiar with it. Just, yeah.
And it just yeah, it just that kind of bowls me over because I always think that's a much bigger chunk of the film. It's a much more the point of the film. But I suppose it's just the thing that stands out. And what and the other thing that like Clarence doesn't come into the movie for a lot. I think it's an hour and 38 minutes. I think I counted. Yeah. So it just like always amazes me that this is yeah that the how long it takes to become It's a Wonderful Life.
That's right. No, but I think it has to do with the fact that they needed to spend the time to first tell us everything that really happened.
Absolutely.
I think that's where that comes in. So basically with this minute, the two of them look up and George sees once again the sign that says Nick's. And he goes, "Why? This ought to be Martini's place." And then he turns to Clarence, and Clarence like looks away. He seems, I don't know if embarrassed is the right word, but he doesn't want to look George in the eye when he says it. And then George looks at him and goes, "Look, who are you?" And Clarence gives his typical response, "I told you, George, I'm your guardian angel." Yeah, I know you told me that. What else are you? What? Are you a hypnotist?"
And he actually pokes him to see if he's
That's
corporeal,
right.
which of course he is. He's an angel made flesh.
Yes, exactly. Well, he was gonna take a drink, so that he needs to be able to do that.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, he mentions the fact here. He asks him if he's a hypnotist. When do you think hypnotism started, I guess, becoming
It's
popular?
mesmer, isn't it?
Ooh,
That's
very good. Yes. So that's right. Franz Mesmer in the late 18th century is basically known as the father of modern day hypnosis. And there was a time where it was actually called the mesmerism before they started calling it hypnosis.
Hypnotism, yeah.
That's right. And I mean, basically, the whole idea is putting someone in some sort of it's okay. So hypnosis is a human condition involving focused attention, reduced peripheral awareness, and an enhanced capability to respond to suggestion.
I've never been hypnotized.
I might have been. I was once in the audience. No, you see, that's the thing. I was once in the audience of during a hypnosis show, and when the hypnotist was putting people under, on the stage, so I followed all of his instructions while I was, in the crowd. And so I don't know if I was pretending or if it really happened, but in the end they had to have the hypnotist come over to me to theoretically take me out of the trance. So I mean he didn't make me do anything or anything like that, but the idea was I think my hands were stuck together and my eyes were closed.
Yeah. Of course, like when people ask, like, are they just playing along or is it real? Like playing along is real. It is
That's
that's
right.
what hypnosis is. You're playing along. And a lot of people seem to want to kind of debunk hypnosis, and I would certainly be very skeptical and certainly want to debunk like wild claims that have been made about it. But people seem to want to like debunk the thing itself, and all it is like being, as you said, a lower peripheral awareness, deep focus, really relaxed and really suggestible. And the most extraordinary thing I found about I've been hypnotized a couple of times, and a friend of mine was studying hypnosis, and he put me under to practice. And what I found most extraordinary about it is while it's happening, I'm quite aware that I'm going through this process and I'm going deeper and deeper. And then when I'm under, I'm like, yeah, this is nice. I can, this is a nice state to be in. It's nice and relaxed, but it's not that different. It's not that kind of special. And I kind of thought it would be a bit more dramatic, you know? And then he clicks his fingers and brings you back out of it. And then once you come up, for me anyway, my experience, this was the really amazing part of it, is realizing how different your perception was while you were under, and now the room just seems more vivid and more present, and it's amazing. You're so much more aware of, like, yeah, it's like it's way more than just closing your eyes and opening your eyes again. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
I find it just fascinating because it's just a capacity that we have to be in a particular, you're still very awake, but you know, in a state where maybe you'd be asleep usually, i.e. your eyes closed, deeply relaxed, but you've still got that little connection with the waking world. I recommend it to anyone. It's just a fantastic place to be, whether you believe in the what it can do, and there's ridiculous claims made about what it can do and change your life instantly and all of this, but yeah, it's great.
Right. I always remember, Jim Carrey was on It's in Living Color, which was one of
Yeah.
the,
Oh, I remember it well.
so there was, I remember there was one of the first episodes where, they're showing a hypnotist on stage
Yeah.
and he hypnotizes Jim Carrey's character and tells him that he should act like a chicken, and then the hypnotist has a heart attack and dies on stage.
So he's stuck as a
So he's
chicken.
stuck as a chicken, and you see him like going around, and he's starving. He doesn't have anything to. So he walks into a fast food place, and we hear his voice, and we hear his in his, his voice in his mind saying, "Oh, I can't believe that I'm stuck here. I really need to be able to communicate and whatever." And so he said, "Okay, I'm gonna write down what I want my order," because when he speaks, he just says cluck, 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 cluck. So he writes
Yeah.
down the order, and then we see the note that he wrote, and it says cluck, cluck, cluck. It's
That's great. I can really picture I can really picture Jim Carrey doing that as well and putting all his physicality into it, and I'm sure, yeah, I can imagine they wrote that sketch based on the fact that, you know, hey, this guy can do an impression of a chicken. How do we use
That's right.
that? But it also makes me think of like that's, I mean, I suppose it's an obvious enough idea, but it's, I wonder, did Mike Judge rip off that idea? Because that's what happens in Office Space when our main character is under the influence, the hypnotist dies of a heart attack there and then, and rather than thinking he's a chicken, all he is like somebody with no worries and just walks out of the office. It's a great moment. And yeah, somebody who went from super stressed and taking everything seriously to somebody who just like zero F's given.
Oh,
Shout out to Office Space Minute, of course. It was
wow.
a very enjoyable run. Yep.
Were you on that show, or you just listened to it?
No, I just listened. It was in a period where I was trying to keep up with every minute show that was on the go at the time, and I've let that slide a little bit now. But yeah, that was just because I was like developing my own movies by minute, Malkovich minute, and I was like wanting to listen to everybody else and get to know everybody in the community and all that. So yeah,
right, okay, makes sense. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. So basically, you know, George is very confused. He thinks, so what do you have in this system? So then the response that he gets from Clarence is, no, of course not. Well, then why am I seeing all these strange things here? Don't you understand, George? It's because you were not born. Well, if I wasn't born, who am I? You're nobody. You have no identity. What do you mean, no identity? My name's George Bailey. There is no George Bailey. You have no papers, no cards, no driver's license. And as he's talking, so George keeps like moving his hands around him, you know, checking his pockets and things like that.
Looking for his papers, yeah.
That's right. No 4F card, no insurance policy. You know, and then he starts looking in the watch pocket of his pants, you know, because he had put the Zuzu's pedals there. And Clarence just automatically sees it and says to him, and they're not there either. And he goes, what? Zuzu's pedals.
So and that's another thing. How do you know all that? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love the way that they do this, you know, that he put it's the great. Pedals.
Yeah.
He put the pedals in his pocket because he had nowhere else to put them at the time and then forgot about them over the course of the last few hours. And
yeah,
but Clarence remembered seeing that. Which
Clarence has just watched the movie that we've just watched.
More or less, yeah. But he watched it. He watched it sped up a little bit.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah. But yeah, it's and there's a mention of the 4F card, which is his, you know, exemption from fighting in the war. Which is an interesting little mention, which is mentioned earlier that he was classified as 4F because of his ear. So you probably did the research about that back then. Did you? Or talked about that. Yeah. So I thought that was an interesting little touch that like he was classified 4F, even though Potter was in charge of the draft.
And well, he couldn't get away with doing otherwise.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wonder, because I suppose he couldn't. I suppose, you know, it would damage his reputation if somebody shows up with a dodgy ear. But I would have imagined that, you know, it's a part of the film where we're skipping a lot of the timeline. We're not, you know, we're speeding past it, but it just makes me think that like, oh, wouldn't Potter see that as an opportunity to get rid of Bailey, get rid of George, you know, send him off to war in the hopes of never seeing him again.
It is very possible, you know, that he could have tried to do it, but I guess he realized that, you know, there's only certain rules that you can bend when there are other people looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. And it made me think as well about, like, I wonder how much of a handicap deaf in one ear, deafness in one ear is considered in the military, because it would seem, you know, it's important, but it would just seem that when you're you know, when it's war and you're you need all hands.
You don't want to take someone who's going to potentially cause more damage.
Yeah, yeah. I just think I don't know how tactically important it is to hear in both ears. I suppose it would affect your peripheral awareness, your situational awareness. You don't know where explosions are coming from if you're on the battlefield. And I suppose there is also the home front is very important, and the war effort has a lot of they kind of need to get as many people at home. Yeah, a lot of work to do. I suppose the fact that he has an important social function in the buildings and loan as well was probably a factor.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And, you know, I love the fact that, you know, he's talking about different things. And Clarence already knows to mention to him about the fact that, you know, he doesn't have a driver's license. Because, you know, Clarence is 300 years old. He didn't have a car.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But he's been keeping up. He's been studying.
Correct. So I actually checked to see. I mean, I don't know if, how much you know the answers to these, but
Hit me.
how many U.S. states, or sorry, what U.S. state has the youngest age approval for getting a driver's license?
Oh, I thought it was 16 nationally. I didn't know it varied from state to
No, no, no.
state.
It's state laws.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is one state that at the age of 14 and 3 months you can get a license.
14 and 3 months.
That's right.
Tennessee,
No, it's in South Dakota.
South Dakota.
And then there are three states that let you get it at the age of 15, and that's Wyoming, Montana, and North Dakota. Which
Wow, I'm
obviously
just
they're
picturing big distances
yes, but I think
and big farms.
it has more to do with the fact that they need to be able to drive tractors and things like that.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like wide open country, yeah.
Correct. Then you have four states that allow at the age of 15 and a half.
Yeah.
That's New Mexico, Indiana, Virginia, and South Carolina.
New Mexico, Indiana, Virginia, and South Carolina.
Yeah.
Okay, they're all, yeah. Nice part of the country.
Yeah. And then basically sorry, no, there's only sorry. There are only two states that allow you to get it at 15 and a half, and that's New Mexico and South Carolina. Most states it's 16. And then you have a bunch of states which also have it at 16 and a half, including New York and Kentucky, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Connecticut, Massachusetts, not Connecticut.
Yeah.
But bottom line is most places in the US you have to be 16 in order to be able to get a driver's license. How old do you have to be in Ireland to get a driver's license?
I was just thinking that, I think it's 17, 16 or 17. I was like, I don't have a full driver's license yet to this day. I have a learner's permit. But
And the learner's
yeah,
permit is
like
still good?
it's still good. Like I have to renew it every now and then, and I have to get tests and all that. But I'm pretty good at driving. I am not good at passing driving tests. And I think now that I've been diagnosed with ADHD, I can ask for certain conditions of the test to be catered to me. But I have to look into that. But yeah, it's like it was never a big deal for me. And then when I went to college, I was in college in Dublin and just went bus, train, bike everywhere, and I just had no need for a car. And but then when I moved back down a couple of years ago, back down to Galway where I grew up, it's yeah, I am out in the middle of the country, and you pretty much need a car everywhere you go. And it's a little bit annoying because I have to, officially I have to have a driver in the car with me, a fully qualified driver in the car with me.
Oh, wow.
And that's what's the difference in a learner's permit. I may have once or twice bent that rule. But yeah, so
I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to ask. I
get my
don't.
license sorted.
I don't want to get you in trouble. Yeah, but you probably should get it started already.
I will. It's on a
Wait,
very long list of
how many
things I
years?
need to get sorted.
How many years have you been on this learner's permit?
I don't know. I
Are we
mean,
talking
like,
decades?
not decades. Would it be a decade? No, I wouldn't. No, it wouldn't. Because for years I just didn't need to drive. It just
And it doesn't.
wasn't
I'm curious about the fact that it doesn't expire at some point. The learner's
Oh, it
permit.
does. Yeah, it does. You have to renew it. Yeah, and you have to You just it's I mean, it's just a fee, and you have to renew it, and you have to, you know, register for the test to the, you know, to show that you're available for the full test within a certain time frame and all that. Wow. Which I am, and then I've had to cancel them. It's blah, blah. It's annoying. It's just like, yeah, it's extremely difficult for a lot of people with ADHD to pass these tests. Just because the conditions are so, yeah, they're so hyper stressful, and it's nasty. But it's nothing to do with like being able or not being able to drive. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Understandable. Wow. Mm. Okay. Now, for me, it's a very foreign concept because I've been driving for 34 years.
Yeah. Well, you were living in Motor City.
That's right. Hey. I'm glad you remember that. Yeah.
Oh, of course.
I remember on the day of my birthday, there was a huge snowstorm, and I was so pissed that my parents wouldn't let me go to the DMV to get my, you know, to officially get the license. I had to wait like a day or two for things to calm down a little bit. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. What can you do?
Yeah.
So, I mean, basically, we end this minute with Zuzu's pedals.
Yeah, they're a beautiful, beautiful little touch with Zuzu's pedals.
Yeah.
It's a little token. It's a little kind of it's a clever way of like having visual to kind of remind us and show us which world we're in now and what the rules are. Because if you can, it's one of those things that, you know, they say show, don't tell. This is one where you have to tell, because it's just one of those things. It has to be just a character needs to say it because it's technical. It's complicated. But if you can show and tell, that's the way to do it. And we've got like the life insurance policy in the pocket and the petals in the other pocket. They're the two really key things. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track. Inspirational story edition, where my guest will give some sort of adventure, misadventure, story, anecdote, something has happened to them over the course of their life that was very inspirational to them or to someone else. So, Austin, you have a story for us?
Yeah, I racked my brains trying to think of this one, and I just thought of this story that made me kind of warm and fuzzy in a way that kind of matches the romance of this movie. But I don't want to be too self-serving because it's like a romantic gesture that I did. But
why not? You know, it's something that you did that inspired someone else.
Exactly. So that's the way I look at it. So I'm allowing myself. So hopefully the audience will allow me as well. When my wife and I were my now wife, my then girlfriend, were going out for. Had been going out for a couple of years, and we lived in the same house. I just got her out of the house for a while one day, and then you know, brought her back like with me, the two of us, and had everything set up and planned and rehearsed beforehand, so that when I, you know, just out in the hall, I just said, stand there for a second, I just have a little song to sing for you. And I picked out the ukulele. I was playing a lot of ukulele at the time, very very hipster, I know. And I started singing How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You. I played the first couple of chords of it. And then I was able to kick the door open to the living room, and we had a band set up. And so we just did it all acoustically. My housemate was a drummer, and another friend of mine was a violin player, and another housemate was a guitarist. So we just had an acoustic band set up in the living room, and we did that and another song. We did There's a Light That Never Goes Out by the Smiths, and so we just had this like impromptu concert for my wife, and I just, you know, set her down in the couch while we were playing and everything. And I kind of never quite matched that level again of romantic gesture,
because the spontaneity mixed with the preparation, you know what I mean? That you make it feel spontaneous, but then it's like the surprise comes from how, like, oh, this didn't just happen. There's a band in the living room. And it was really, yeah, it was a really magical experience. And yeah, and it's just part of, like, music and singing is a huge part of myself and my wife's relationship. And I would go on to be in a band with the very drummer we're talking about, started a wedding band, and then that was my career for a good few years as well. So that was kind of the start of that as well. But it just for the other people that were there at the little, you know, it was just a little kind of Saturday daytime get together for my wife's birthday, that it warmed their hearts, and it was a very romantic moment.
Well, that's great. I don't know why you were hesitant. I think that's a great story.
Yeah, it's just because I don't want to, you know, blow my own trumpet, and it seemed like it was what popped into my head when I was thinking about the romance in this movie, and you said a heartwarming story, and then I was just like, oh, I can't use that.
Perfectly chosen, Austin. I think it's so great. Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing that with us. All right. So would you like to tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, if you go to malkovichminute.net, you will see the links to the various social media. I'm not on them very much, but...
I can attest to that.
Yeah. But if you want to use the email link that you find there, that's the one that'll get to me most easily.
While you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot diggity dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.